Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 92 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. And we have both blown our noses. And
we have.
We're ready to go, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think this is a winter cold settling in, do you think?
Isn't there something about blowing your nose and that gets you, like, gets your energy up and gets your oxygen pumping?
Yeah, but that's not blowing your nose. It's called Bastrika. It's a breathing exercise. You go...
Yeah, it does blow your nose inadvertently as well.
Well, yeah, you do blow snot everywhere. That's quite true.
Bastrika.
Bastrika means bellowed breath.
Okay. Okay, we have bellowed our breath. And we're back for more, aren't we, Sean?
We are.
And this week we're talking about repression, sexuality, a bit of 50 Shades of Grey thrown in there to punch around a little bit and take the mickey out of. I haven't read it, but yeah, we'll get to all that. But I can have a go anyway.
I've had that misfortune.
Is that going the wrong foot? Yeah, there's a lot of fans. We don't want to send them all. So that's slagging us off. for those who don't know who we are, liveinthepresent.co.uk to find out who we are. There's an archive of all previous 91 episodes on there too. Sign up for the mailing list if you want to hear about this show first, and we will email you weekly with as soon as the podcast goes live. You'll be the first to hear about it, or one of the first few hundred at least. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty cool.
What have you been up to, Sean?
My main thing at the moment is I've got a really interesting project on.
Interesting.
Where I always do interesting projects. Where I'm working with a lady who is a classically trained musician. Ooh. Who needs to learn to improvise.
Musically, or...?
Yeah, so the thing is that very often classically trained musicians can only play music if they've got the music in front of them.
Okay, yeah.
And in improvisation, you throw the music away and you have to feel what you're playing.
Oh, okay.
So, and that's a really good thing to be involved in, because it's someone letting go and discovering themselves.
What kind of mind-altering drugs are you prescribing?
Yeah, we should have some.
Marijuana's got to be there.
You just got to feel the vibe, man.
Yeah, only kidding, by the way, guys. Hey, this isn't the BBC. We can advocate anything, can't we?
We could.
Illegal drugs?
Are we allowed hang on. I can just see a police car calling outside.
Can you get it prescribed over here at all?
Can get tinctures of marijuana prescribed for certain things.
Not for musical inspiration, though.
No. There's a lot of evidence, which is... isn't all scientific, but there's a lot of evidence about people with MS and things like that.
Yeah.
And having chronic pain disorders.
I haven't read up on that. Yeah, I know a lot of people kind of swear by it, don't they? My experience of it. It comes up in the news every now and again, doesn't it? The whole legalisation issue. I think I read an article last week saying how it's 144 times less dangerous than alcohol, even though there's that whole psychosis argument as well.
It's, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess that in the end, anything that alters our consciousness has side effects. Doesn't matter what it is.
Coffee. This is decaf, isn't it?
Yeah, this is decaf.
I'm sure that even that...
But as Conrad Rafiq would say, even if it's decaffeinated, it's still got caffeine in it.
Yeah, okay.
He says.
What does he know? What does Conrad know? Rock Mountain.
Cheers, Conrad.
Where was it going? I was going to talk about someone else there.
I mean, you're going to be interesting or influential.
I was, yeah. hugely influential. Yeah, no, Jon Snow, I think there's something coming on Channel 4 about some kind of drug season. And Jon Snow's had a hit of marijuana or tea.
Oh, right, yeah. You get people going to do that every now and again. They'll go and take LSD.
Well, the thing is what he did, apparently. I read he took two massive hits of it. I think he did mostly the equivalent of a bong.
Yeah.
Not that I know what one of those is. And then subjected himself to, like, an MRI scan.
Oh, right.
He came out of the experience saying it was the worst of his life. And it's been a while for me, but I went to university, so clearly I have experimented with that substance. And the last thing I would want to do is get an MRI scan or confine myself in a tight little space.
That's called paranoia.
So, listen up, Jon Snow, next time you try it, you know, have a sofa nearby, have a good film, maybe something like Kubrick, 2001.
Yeah.
And then get back to me and let me know what you think.
Yeah, 2001's a good movie, I suppose.
Yeah.
I like that.
The Elevate Road, that kind of thing, yeah. Anyway, I've said enough, I've incriminated myself.
Yeah, I should be ringing the police on Fifth Finest.
I'm a dad, jeez, can you imagine? Yeah, what were we talking about this week, Sean?
We're talking about 50 Shades of Grey. This but it's the issue about the films come out, because I did a blog on this when the book first came out, and we talked about it then.
Yeah.
And I've, on the blog for this, I've written a blog for this cast, and there is a connection to the original blog that we did. But it's become live again for me, because... when the book came out, I got people coming in, women coming into the consulting room with a copy under their arm, and it was like woman after woman. So in the end, you start talking about it. And in the end, I went and got a copy, tried to read it, and the writing was so appalling that I couldn't cope with reading. I gave up.
Yeah.
And I got a copy on Audible to listen to when I was driving around, which was nearly as bad. And you got this naive woman called Anastasia who says things like, oh golly and oh my and things like that, and it makes you want to poke her in the eye.
I should say early on, I haven't read the book, but my wife read all three, and she's every now and again I'd lead over and have a little look, because I'd read about the writing style. I was quite interested in that and how awful it was.
it's interesting that people went on and read all three.
Yeah.
Now, and the thing that comes over to me in all this stuff is that the book was bad. It was bad on lots of levels. They say that the second two books that I haven't read started to change because they were starting to deal with this man's behaviour. Yeah. Which actually becomes a bit nonsensical as well, but we'll get into that. But the thing that for me is the huge contrast is that in my consulting room I see lots of couples.
Yeah.
And with lots of couples there are issues, sexuality issues, about what men want from women, and the woman in the cases that I'm working with isn't prepared to provide, or the issues of internet porn.
Mm-hmm.
And the men using internet porn and the women being disgusted by it or whatever. So I see this huge disparity between male demand and women's response in my consulting room. And yet when I look at Shades of Grey, which to me is a book which does depict domestic violence and abuse,
mm-hmm.
we've got over 9 million hits on the Facebook page and people queuing out the door to buy the book and watch the movie. But it's the women that are queuing out the door to watch the movie.
Yes, and that's where I brought this word repression in, that basically...
Yeah.
Early little argument in terms of, I mean, I think it's like a 70-30 split in terms of who watches porn online, men versus women, men
yeah.
in the favour of men. I think it could be a bit more than that. Anyway, I'll put some links in the show notes on the website about research that's been done. First one is an interesting one. Some scientists tried to do some research on men in their 20s that didn't watch porn, so they could try and understand their side of things, but they stumbled across a problem when they couldn't find any. Literally,
they couldn't find any men.
Couldn't find any men in the 20s
who hadn't watched porn.
Yeah, weren't kind of semi-regular watchers of porn.
Right.
But then on the flip side, there's an article on the Atlantic .com which I will get a link to, which says that 60-odd% of people, men and women, think that it's morally wrong, porn. So guys are watching it, but know that it's probably not that great for society as a whole. But
when you do that, you see, when you start to say those kinds of things, it sounds to me like addiction, because the amount of people that would smoke, that would say, I know smoking's bad, but I still do it. Yeah. If you're looking at the same thing, because since we last had all those conversations and we talked about internet pornography, I went away and I've been on a course which turns into a diploma about... Internet porn addiction.
Right.
Yeah, and we're looking at addictive issues online, which includes things like gambling as well as pornography.
Yep.
Yeah, you know, really. And so what that meant for me, because I was a porn virgin when we started all this, so I've been around the internet and I've looked at everything from every possible angle, it would appear.
Although you did work on film sets, didn't you?
But that was really innocent. That was. They were stills. because it was to do with that they were basically still pictures. But I did nipple flicking where I had to go and flick people's nipples up.
Many moons ago, we should say.
Yeah, when I was a teenager. It was quite quite fun when you're a teenager.
Are these like the back streets of London, Soho and all that kind of...
Yeah, and it was the back streets of Chelsea, really. But the they were doing... when they used to shoot commercials, but when they were low on commercials, they did like soft porn stuff. You know, but it was very innocent. It wasn't... There was nothing... like you can just see on regular porn sites every day now.
Yeah.
But I mean, having had a good hunt around, the amount of pornography which is to do with men dominating women online seems to be huge. Mm. And the only place that you see pornography where you get a kind of an equality between the two participants seems to be lesbian websites, where you get woman on woman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's because one of the things I've been doing from a psychological point of view and looking around is looking at the different kind of emotional power balances that are there.
What's the deal with the 50 Shades then? Because he's the guy in control, so it would seem, you know, the billionaire, Mr. Guy.
Well, if you look at it, people have tried, and you can check this out on the internet, if you type in Mr. Grey and psychological disorders, and people talk about narcissism and personality disorder and stuff like that. And they make the assumption in it that his sexual behaviour is due to trauma when he was younger. Yeah. And all the bondage lot, the bondage, dominant, submissive, sadomasochistic body of people that operate in those areas were up in arms about that, because they were saying that their sexual behaviours weren't the result of some kind of trauma. It wasn't an illness. They were doing something that they enjoyed doing. It was a pleasure.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that that's really, really important, because the person who's depicted in the Shades of Grey book is somebody who has some kind of odd disorder.
Mm.
Yeah. And the woman who's involved, Anastasia, seems to be some kind of naive twit who kind of gets involved in this man's problems.
This secret room.
Yeah, and all that kind of stuff. As opposed to people that, which I can quite easily accept, I guess, that when you have consenting adults that decide to do things like nail each other's willies to the counter, you know, that, and that's fine. If that's what you're into and that floats your boat, that's great. But it's consensual.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and there are all kinds of things in Shades of Grey that sound like domestic violence. They sound like abuse. They sound like the people that I work with in my consulting room. Yeah, and I think that certainly the people I work with in my consulting room who are dominated by, and it is usually a male figure, but not always,
mm-hmm.
yeah, then the people that are dominating them are people that do have psychological and emotional disorders.
Right. You know,
they've been traumatised by their own childhoods and they're playing it out.
Wow.
Yeah, which is very different to people that are into bondage and sadomasochism for other reasons.
Uh-huh. One of the things that's come out from the kind of the wake of the movie release, and actually hasn't been that. I've seen bad reviews. I've seen some good reviews.
I haven't seen any good reviews. Everything I've read has been about how boring it was.
Well, I've seen reviews that say it's not terrible. It's not as bad as it could have been.
Do you mean was that a negative? You know, it should have been.
Yeah, there's a Mark Kermode one, the BBC guy. I'll put it on. It's a YouTube thing. And he basically, he kind of sympathises with the director a little bit, because she's a good director. I think she's actually bailed on to the next movie already, just because she had tricky source material to work with. And I think the problem the director had was, I won't go on about this too long, is that she was a good director, but this she felt a bit kind of hamstrung by the script. She kind of... because people will want to see the film almost as a carbon copy of the book, really, just... visualised version of the book, whereas the book's not written very well, the dialogue's atrocious, so I think she kind of cut as much out as she could dialogue wise.
Well, we had an experience. We were in a spa last week when we were away, week before last, and we were in some swinging chairs outside, and there was an outside jacuzzi, and there's these two women in their 20s in the in the Chiguri talking, and I've got ears on elastic also. And these two women, they turned out they were teachers. They were on half term, which is interesting. Yeah. And they were talking about having seen the movie. And this girl was saying about, you know, oh, the movie was very boring. It didn't show any kind of really juicy sex. And she was talking about that scene where he was beating her clitoris with a riding crop.
Oh, right. And that's in the movie or that's in the book?
That's in the book, yeah. And she wanted to see it.
Right.
And she was disappointed that she hadn't seen it on the screen.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing then, isn't it? Because it's almost as if... we'll say maybe just women in this case have gone to see the film because they want a bit of naughtiness in their lives that, to be honest, they could have any time they wanted just by Googling a few things and...
Yeah, going on, it's all there. I've seen it.
You want. So why aren't they just looking in it anyway? And then they're hoping and praying that it's in this movie that is it's socially acceptable for you to watch. And I know loads of girls and ladies on Facebook that have been off to see it, you know, with pals and all that and naughty little night out with their buddies.
Yeah.
So there's that kind of repression because they're holding themselves back a little bit in one way, aren't they?
I suppose, in a way, you know, when you get these the guys that do the hunky chunky guys that do the strip things at women's clubs or parties or whatever. It's the same kind of thing, isn't it? It's a kind of a titillated naughtiness that you can watch from a distance. You're not actually involved in, so you're a voyeur of something.
Uh-huh.
But my experience in the consulting room is that if those same women were subject to those behaviours, then they would be talking about abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, not about titillation.
Mm.
Yeah. So to me, I'm a bit kind of confused between the people that I see and the stories that I'm told, and then the evidence from actually seeing the response to the books and the film.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't add up. It doesn't make sense to me.
Mm, interesting. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, do you think we should go and watch the movie? I think we should have probably seen it before we did this episode.
Well, I the things that I've read about it, I mean, I'm quite happy to go and watch the movie.
We'll
like the odd couple at the back. I'm okay to do that. The things that I'm hearing and the things that I'm reading make it sound like the film's as bad as the book. Yeah, but maybe the book and the film are a red herring. What we're talking about here is the repression of people in society.
Yeah.
I mean, sex, everybody has a sexual identity. Most people have some kind of sexual life.
Mm-hmm.
We don't talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so people view it in kind of odd ways on screens or through keyholes or whatever they're doing. So we get that kind of fantasised idea of sexuality because people aren't open about what's going on.
Yeah, and in most societies are... Yeah, we have different levels of openness about it, but I can't think of any parts of the world where it's really open and discussed, you know, big time.
The only places I've ever been where sexuality has been completely open is when you're in tantric situations, where if you're in a tantra training situation, you might be allocated a partner you've never seen before in your life, who you're working with. But the aims are different. The aims are about a more kind of a spiritual sensuality and a meditative bliss, rather than a kind of a beating your bits with a hammer on.
I mean, we Brits are seen as perhaps slightly more buttoned down than other maybe European nations even.
No, I think that is a misnomer. I think that what happens is that the screen is that we're all different, but actually underneath, it's like that idea of we know that statistically 61% of women in Britain admit to having affairs, when they're in regular relationships. 61%.
Holy moly!
And it's probably higher than that. It's probably more. Let's say 2/3 of people. Yeah, they're not all bonking the same bloke, so it's 2/3 of people rather than just women.
Yeah. Right.
Which means that you've got a 1 in 3 chance of your partner being faithful to the relationship.
Wow.
Yeah? So that in from that point of view, that's going on in British society, but it's hidden. In French society, where it's assumed that people have things like affairs, but you just don't make a big deal about it.
Okay, yeah.
So it's a different kind of approach.
I did actually see there was something on Five Live in the past few days I've seen. I'll try and dig it out, the little clip I heard. But there's a few dating sites now. In fact, no, that's it. There's two dating sites in Britain now that have a million plus members. So each one has a million. And they are specifically targeted at people that want to have extramarital affairs. So it's basically Match.com, but for people that are married and they want to have something on the side. A million members on each site. So how many people are even married in Britain? I mean, probably maybe half of that, maybe 20, 30 million. That's quite a percentage of people.
But if you look on any of those, the porn things, as I went through the web, is on the right-hand side is the column about, you know, do you want to bonk a local somebody?
Yeah, meet your local, yeah.
And if you press those buttons and you look at that, it says, you know, you're about to see pictures of people that you may know. You know, this is a confidential thing. Well, yeah. I didn't actually go into research purposes.
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
For our audience.
I thought I'm not putting my name and face up there. But that idea that there are people around your locality who are looking for an anonymous bonk of some form or another.
Yeah. There are a few videos on the School of Life relationship channel, which I think I've linked to in the past, where they talk about the need for secrets in relationships and how it's okay to keep the odd little... I'm not advocating maybe having affairs per se, but secrets, maybe in terms of looking at pornography, maybe we do keep these secrets to spare the embarrassment of our partners, you know, we're not doing it, on the slide to be nasty or mean or anything. We don't tell them because we're a bit shy about it and we don't want to upset them. So there's that side of things as well. So I'll try and find those videos, which are quite interesting as well.
I think that the realities of life are that all people have an inner private world, however completely open they are with other people, you know, with their partner. Everyone has an inner world that is personal to them.
Yeah, yeah. The lady in there that was interviewed on Five Live about this site that she uses, she's not married, but she's in a long-term relationship for 20-odd years, and she's used this site to hook up with six or seven, well, a lot of other men, actually, she said, but she's gone that extra step with six or seven over the years. But she doesn't... Her partner, she said, as far as she knows, is completely, you know, oblivious. It must be, because otherwise he'd say something, wouldn't he? But, you know, she doesn't tell him because she doesn't want to upset him, and she loves him. But she just needs this extra thing on the side.
If you follow up the research that says that 61% of women have affairs, and then you go into, OK, why are you doing that? Most of the women would say that they love the person who's the primary relationship, and they have other investments in it, like, you know, house, pension, kids, whatever. But there's something that they're not getting. They're not getting a bit of woo. So they go and get their woo somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I assume that would be true if you interviewed the men as well.
Sure.
But maybe the issue about communicating together so that you do create the woo, maybe.
Yes. Putting a bit of work in there.
Yeah.
In fact, there is definitely a video on that channel, School of Life, which talks about how to keep the spark going in your sex life in a relationship.
Mm.
So I think we have talked about that in the past on an episode.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
But I mean, accepting the fact that you and I need to go and see the movie.
Yeah.
50 Shades of Grey.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If we can't get it on YouTube.
No, only the trailer. Could probably find a copy, but
yeah, but
respect the artists that made it, you know.
Yeah,
a few quid. Yeah. I went to see Peppa Pig last week at the cinema, so I need that erasing from my.
Is that worse than pornography?
Actually, you know, I quite like Peppa Pig now, and I've seen worse films at the cinema. I was sitting there thinking, what's Terminator 3? That was worse. I remember almost falling asleep. Godzilla, they did one in the 90s. Version of Godzilla, that was atrocious. And Ocean's 12 or Ocean's 13, I remember sitting there thinking, this is absolutely awful. But Peppa Pig was better than those. 50 Shades of Grey, well, I'm not sure, I'll have to wait and see, hey?
Yeah. Okay, we'll go and see it.
Yeah.
We'll go and see it and report back. Yeah? If it's as bad as the book, I should probably get up and walk out.
Yeah, okay. All right. Anything else you'd like to say, Sean?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Have we got a resource of the week, or is it because I wrote it down first, this one?
Well, no, my resource of the week was already that, so it's our resource of the week. So.
Yeah, I was struggling to think of anything else. We should say what it is first.
Yeah, it's my book, which is Tantra, Sex, Orgasm and Meditation.
Yeah.
And it's my take on another way of looking at sexuality, which rather than looking at any of the shades of grey issues, looks at the idea of sensuality, of yep. sensuality and sexuality, and taking things to a higher level. Yeah. So I think maybe because the character in this my book here is Vanessa, maybe we need to rewrite it as kind of 50 Shades of Vanessa and put it out as an alternative to maybe, 50 Shades of Grey.
No, I've read it a few times. I had to proofread it, obviously, way back in the day, so I'd say. It's a good read. We'll stick that. It's definitely got to be your best-selling book.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You get sales on Kindle fairly regularly. So.
Sex sells.
It does, doesn't it? It does. That's why we gave it such a punchy title, I recall.
Yeah.
All right. Next week we're going to talk about procrastination, if you don't mind. That's all right.
Yeah, we can procrastinate on that.
A listener called Paul emailed in saying, and I couldn't believe actually when he mentioned it that we hadn't already done one about this.
I think we have done some procrastination work.
Yeah, we must have done something similar, but maybe not directly.
Yeah.
But that's what we're going to talk about.
Sounds good to me.
In the meantime, go to livingthepresent.co.uk for all the links and all previous archived episodes. Lots of other cool stuff on there too. You have a little explore around the website. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, all that stuff. Quick little mention for iTunes reviews, which we haven't had one in a few weeks.
Yeah. Give us an iTunes review.
If you can spare a few minutes just to give us a rating on iTunes with a paragraph or two, that'd be awesome.
Didn't you say that we were in the 10... most useful.
That's still going. Apple had a get happy section for the new year.
All right.
Of featured content, and we were in the list. Top 10 podcasts.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's good.
Not bad, eh? So and that's all result of reviews and stuff. So you can spare a few minutes up. Beautiful.
Yeah.
And have a good week, Joe.
And you.
See ya, everyone.
You take care. See ya.
Bye.